Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for the man, the myth, my better half in this operation, Mr. Seth Stallman. Seth, welcome to your own dig, sir.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for welcoming me into our spot here. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So this is a little impromptu round two. Seth and I had actually interviewed one another when we very first started the show, just in case we ran out of episodes, and we never ran out. We've had an awesome stream of guests that I definitely want to talk to you a little bit about, touch on our journey now that we're a little over a year into this. But now we're taking this opportunity to interview one another just to kind of do that flyover in the, oh my God, man, we've been doing it for a minute, and, you know, bring ourselves out from behind the camera a little bit in your case.
Yeah.
So, Seth, I know you've had a long journey with your technological prowess, which is the big thing that you do for Keep the Hotel Empty. Talk to me a little bit about where technology starts to come into your life and you start taking advantage of it.
Great place to start. I love that. I mean, I'm definitely among like the first generation to always have technology be a part of our daily lives. So one way that I like to illustrate it to people is to say I taught my grandma how to use YouTube when I was 3 years old.
Nice.
So 3 or 4, yeah. But yeah, it's always been a part of everything, you know, a little different now. Obviously, technology changes and moves so quickly. When I was growing up, we had the family computer. I had a few years in my childhood where there wasn't really smartphones or they weren't really a thing. But it's just always been a part of my life as much as, like, you know, reading, writing, things like that. And often those things just overlap.
Well, you talk about the family computer. I know your dad has some major technological prowess as well. Talk to me a little bit about what your first like introduction to what the computer is, what you can do with it, how you can use this for not only your entertainment, but you start to use it at a very early age for professional creativity as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, my dad is he was always, you know, on the bleeding edge of technology. His he tells me all the time, like, you don't even know technology unless you were doing Y2K reviews back in the day.
Man.
Yeah, it's hard for me to pin down, like, when I started, like, you know, when I was introduced to technology in general, because, again, it's almost like asking, like, when were you introduced to food and water? But certainly, like, I think there's definitely a point where, you know, this machine that's just sitting in the family den, all of a sudden it's like, oh, I can make money out of this.
Right.
And I can have a career surrounding this. Yeah. And I think for me, it was a lot less like there was never a period of my life like, you know, we were talking with Dennis Brock, I think, about this. And it was like people kind of poo-pooed the internet like, oh, you're going to sit at home and make money on your computer. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I never had a moment like that because I think the early internet was such an optimistic and creative place for people who really, really adopted it in that time period, you know. So YouTube has always been my thing, right? Like, there's an example there. I've always loved YouTube, always been a YouTube guy. Definitely felt what Brianna was saying when she was talking about how she's a YouTube girly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that's me. Like, I loved YouTube. And, you know, I've been on the platform since before people were making money on it and making a career.
Right.
But really, really early on in my life, I saw people make that a career. And then I saw these people who, you know, I was following on YouTube, you know, 10,000 views was like super viral. And then all of a sudden, there's this shift and it's like, oh, they're getting millions of views. And now these people are, you know, becoming a part of not just the cream of the crop, the top people on YouTube, but now they're entering the cultural zeitgeist to a point where it's like their household names, right?
Right.
You know, a million people come to mind. You know, we have people, I mean, bad example, but like the Paul brothers, you know, they started on Vine and YouTube, and now everyone knows who the Pauls are. Jake Paul's been in actual TV shows. He's got companies. Like, obviously, they're not the people that I would follow, but Yeah, like
weird obscurity to major relevancy not that long of a period of time.
Exactly.
So yeah. What were you thinking? Like, what, do you remember the first thing that you like made with technology? Like the first Photoshop thing you did, or like the first dumb video you edited?
Oh man. Yeah, no, for sure. So I was always like a big fan of movies, right? Definitely comes from like my earliest memory. My very first memory, as far back as I can go, is sitting in the movie theater at 2 years old watching The Incredibles, right?
Dang.
That's the earliest thing I can remember, and I remember it so vividly. So it just seemed natural the first time, like, I saw my dad with, like, the family camera, which was a thing before iPhones were really popular.
Right.
To pick it up and start shooting things, like making videos. And that progressed into, I used to make these videos, and I'm actually a little nervous to mention them because they're still out there.
Uh-oh. Link in the description. Link in the description. Yeah,
no, don't. But I used to make these videos where we would get our toys and make them like actors, and we would make movies with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed so natural. Like, we had a camera in the house. I had my crew, my actors. I had my brothers who were like the crew members on set, and we made these like really shitty movies out of them. And
oh, that's awesome.
There's definitely, at the beginning, it was all intuitive, like just shit that I thought was funny, like fart jokes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But as it kind of went on, like there were points where like I wanted to start taking it up a notch, and like now I'm writing scripts for them.
And
now,
how old were you at that point, you think?
6, 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's earlier than I thought.
Yeah. And so I'm like 6 or 7 years old. I know how to like film these videos. At the time I was using iMovie, because that's what was free on our family computer to edit them. And yeah, I think everything just kind of stems from there. Like, throughout my whole life, there was never like, I never sat down and thought like, man, I think it'd be cool to do this. Like, there was just these instruments around me, these tools, and I just immediately started plugging them into, you know, stuff that I found fun. But yeah, that kind of progressed into, I guess I'll let you ask and guide where we want to go from here.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, so 6, 7 years old, you're just starting to film fart jokes because this is available. This is on tap.
Uh-huh.
But how soon do you start thinking this is something that you're going to do for work? Because I know that happens sooner than what I thought.
Yeah. So the first time was I started to get really into animation. Now, I'd been playing with cameras for a long time, so I could, you know, I knew my way around it. And my mom, and dude, huge shout out to my mom here. She invested in the Adobe Creative Suite and, you know, the whole Creative Cloud. So I had all these new tools and toys, and I've just devoured them like endlessly.
At what, age 9, 10, something like this? How
old? So I'm trying to think. I think we first got the Creative Suite probably when I was 9, because I was in a few like photography classes and stuff, and our teachers recommended it. And the real transition to where like I felt like I could actually make a career in it was I was 12 years old. I told my mom, you know, I want to make cartoons. Because, you know, videos was something I'd been doing forever. I love cartoons. That's what I wanted to start pushing towards. So she reached out to a friend who owned a creative co-work space here in Sarasota, The Hub, and asked, like, do you know anyone who does animation who would take on an intern? And absolutely there was. Ended up getting an internship with an incredibly creative woman who was a graduate of Ringling.
Nice.
And so that was where it all transitioned for me. Because now I'm not just doing fart jokes and submitting, you know, my Photoshop projects to school. now I'm being handed projects that have money behind them, and I'm getting hands-on experience with that.
Okay, so take me back to day one of that as a 12-year-old.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, super fun. We had a little interview, obviously. She talked with me for a bit, the lady who I ended up working for. Told my mom, like, all the stuff that I would need to really be able to do it. And again, like, my parents have always backed me in a huge way and made everything possible. And so, like, one of the things was $1,000 computer, like, at minimum. And my mom just took me to Best Buy. And, like, you know, my parents don't have a lot of money, like, but they found a way to make it happen. So day one of the job, I feel like, I don't know how to put it. Like, my whole life I had all of these tools around me, but now I've got Pro Tools. Now it's not just like a flip camcorder and iMovie. Now I've got the Creative Cloud. I've got a computer that can actually render stuff. And
the reins have been taken off.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's kind of a fuzzy time. Obviously, very formative time for me, that whole period that I ended up working at the Hub. And, you know, like, that's where my network really began. But I remember on my first day, like, I feel like I just took it in stride. I just walked in. I'd been playing with my computer, like, endlessly since I got it. It was like 3 days, and I just could not take my hands off it, learning everything. And so I just kind of walked in with the attitude of, like, what can I get my hands on?
Mm-hmm.
And I was super, super lucky, and still to this day incredibly grateful that I had someone who, you know, didn't really know me and immediately was just like, all right, see what you can do with this. And yeah.
So for anybody that, or I should say most people that won't know, talk to us a little bit about what gave you the ability to do that stuff as a 12-year-old, what your life was like, because most people are thinking, oh, man, I've been to school all this time. I don't have this kind of latitude. You had some particular latitude that was coupled with parents who were ready to invest in you.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about what that was like and what life is like for you that allows that to happen.
Yeah. So my oldest brother, and this is an important part of the story, I don't know if we even talked about this. My oldest brother is, like, pretty profoundly autistic. Also super creative. My first collaborating partner on my video career.
Yes, sir.
And so, you know, like most parents, my mom put him in school, and school, like, I feel this is the way for most people, if not all, but particularly for him, school was trying to fit, you know, a square peg into a round hole.
Right.
And she picked up on that very quickly. And so it really started with him. She decided that she was going to homeschool all of her kids, which benefited us tremendously because it opened up those opportunities where, you know, we're not in school. You know, I don't even know how many hours a day people are in school because I've never been in one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she was very big on teaching us. My mom's an incredibly smart woman, you know, very educated, but also, like, very much a researcher.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she was really good at just, like, you know, obviously providing us with, like, the standard stuff that just people need to know, you know, teaching us history and things like that. And
right.
Then that progressed into kind of plugging us into places that could, you know, teach at a higher level. You know, when we were kids, we're literally around the dining table, and she's giving us a history lesson. But also, you know, coupled with that, she was really big on putting us into programs to really explore interests. So every single one of us has our own version of, you know, my story, which was, you know, I wanted to learn video, I wanted to learn design, I wanted to learn animation. So she found something to put me in that does that. But yeah.
But you have also a particular passion for everything literary as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so I guess it's so weird. I feel like I've lived a very long time.
That's what I'm saying.
It's hard for me to like break up exactly what I was doing at what time.
And that's kind of why I'm parsing this, because it is a lot of life in a small area.
Mm-hmm.
For average Joe wouldn't have been there yet.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get you to kind of put the framework how this all.
Yeah. Okay. So, man, how do I even? It's funny because, like, you know, I talk to my friends who grew up in public school, and you know, the way they describe their experience and their education, it does feel like a shorter life. Because I was just always doing all kinds of different things. So always had a very strong passion for literature and reading.
Where did that come from?
Also my mom. She absolutely is a huge reader. And so, you know, a big part of it was that just her personality rubbed off on us. You know, we spent a lot of time in like our homeschool, like early life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would literally sit together like in the living room and she would read books to us. And she was very engaging with it too. You know, she would ask us questions, she would pause, say, what do you think is going to happen next? Things like that. And, you know, I definitely plan to carry that on with my daughter.
Awesome.
But yeah, so. Man, I don't even know where to go with the literary part.
Yeah, well, I guess one of the big things is, how do you think that played into then the seemingly other things that you're good at, the technology, the more zeros and one-based things? Because you do have a unique skill set in, you can function well with very rigid things like software, mm-hmm. things that have a fold tab A and a slot B, and then you also have a good mind for seeing things in a broad, you know, ambiguous spectrum. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm curious how you see those skills coming into your life. How do they start unfolding with you? I know the technology one, the reason why I started with there is because that is one of the things I do find intriguing. You just have always had it, and you've just kind of evolved your uses with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how you see the parts of your mindset that have allowed that to happen in the way they've unfurled for you.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned like the, you know, the rigidness of software, right? Because, and I get where you're going now with the book stuff too, because I think one of the biggest benefits that being an avid reader gives, even if you're someone who, you know, I see a lot of people read a lot of junk, and I think that there's still some value to it.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you're someone who just reads a lot of fiction, if you read things that challenge you, I think one of the things that you pick up is this kind of, I guess, there's kind of a mindset of like, there's no pre-constructed path.
Right.
There's not just option A and B. There's so many outside of that. And I think it gives you a unique mind to think outside of the box. And so, yeah, like when it comes to technology, you know, there is like a rigidness to it. You have to learn the rules for how something works.
Then you can tweak.
Right. That, and also, but that's just like, to me, I guess, that's just like, all right, you have a power drill. You have to hold the button to make the thing turn. What you can do with that turning thing is endless, right?
Right.
And so that's kind of how I've always seen technology. And I think life at large, like, you know, I never really had plans for a very, I guess, standard life. Like, I never thought like, okay, well, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to go to college and then I'm going to get a job doing this. Like, you know, and being in the startup world, absolutely hammered that home too.
Yeah, because that kind of becomes the next leg of what you do with your technological abilities.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's jump to that part. So after you've been at the hub for a couple of years and you're, you know, refining some skills, you're not 12 anymore,
mm-hmm.
what's the next step where you throw your hat into a new ring?
Okay. Good spot. So I think one thing that's interesting with growing up in startups is that, or at least for me, you know, obviously I had to get, like, I guess, more standard jobs when the startup market was kind of dry. There wasn't anything really going on. But I did a lot of bouncing between startups because startups can go up and they can go down.
That's just kind of the nature.
It's the nature of it. Yeah, exactly. But I always had this feeling that, like, you can find very unconventional paths through life, and you can kind of write your own rules. So, yeah, spent a lot of time in startups and outside of that doing all these different things that interest me on the side. And there was definitely a point, I don't know if I want to jump this far ahead, but maybe I just will. I definitely got to a point in that game where, you know, I had refined my talents to now where not just startups with, you know, people who have known me for a long time would want to hire me, but now corporate companies would want to hire me. People who have never seen me before want to hire me. They just look at my portfolio and they could see what I'm capable of. And I spent a lot of time in these jobs, and at some point in my, I guess, former career now.
Your teenage career.
Right.
Early teenage career.
Yeah. I think I was about 9 years into it when, you know, I finally realized, like, I got into this in the first place because I liked making movies and I wanted to make animations, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do things that I found interesting. And I have been doing this kind of work for corporate projects and other people's businesses for now 9 years. And it was like I woke up from a long dream where I was like, oh shit, I've been in the training phase this whole time. Why am I still...
That's the montage part of the movie.
Yes. Why am I still making commercials for like lawyers' offices and stuff? Like, yeah. So around the time, it was right at that time, I decided I was going to finally start my own thing. And that's what led to me and you meeting up, right?
Yep.
So at first, I think the realization was like, all right, well, if I'm not going to work for other people, and this is me still being very small-minded after doing this for a long time, if I can do this so well for other, you know, working for somebody, having a boss, I can do this for myself. So my first plan was I'm going to start a digital marketing company. And
Barrier to entry.
Right, right. And so that's what I did. You know, I started a company and started going out and finding clients, because I've done this for 9 years. I've found clients for my bosses. I've seen them get clients. So I just started doing what I know. And very, very thankful for that, because that's how I found you. You know, you and the group that you were with at the time was one of my first clients. But I very, very quickly realized that what I had done is I had, you know, broken up the role of boss now into a bunch of individual people that we call clients. And they're all micromanaging me. And now it's like, oh, this is worse than just having a boss. Because, like, with a boss, like, I can be micromanaged by one person. Not to say I haven't had great bosses. Tony Marchuk, shout out to Tony. Absolutely loved working with him. Every year that I worked with Tony was an incredible year. But now I see, like, every client that he had when, you know, we were doing work where we were doing client work, they were all micromanaging him. And so, like, whatever was dictated for me by bosses at the time was like, yeah, they were kind of shielding me from all of how their time was being managed, dictated by other people. And, you know, I felt the full brunt of that pretty quickly.
Well, okay, that's a mission drift maybe you could provide some good insight on. Talk to me a little bit about what your different experiences have been in your freelance time versus working with people, because now you're at a time where you're doing both.
Yeah, true. So I think the main difference is just, like, when you're working with a company, I wasn't in charge of managing the relationships between, like, the company and the clients, right? I just would come in and I would know, like, these are all the things that our clients need, and I have this much time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in whenever I was working in startups, I always had, like, I was given incredible bandwidth to decide how I want to go about that. And generally, like, especially, you know, working with people who knew me and knew me for a long time, you know, Tony knew me from day one, my first day on the job, my first internship. He was my first, you know, work friend. So he would just kind of say, you know, these are all the things that we have on the plate, tackle it how you want. And, you know, I was just in charge of managing myself.
And the time it needed to be done in.
Exactly, yeah. Then moving on to being freelance and having my own clients, you know, now you're responsible not just for how you're handling the work, but also the relationship between you directly to the client.
Okay, so what were you thinking when you were like, because I think a lot of people have this moment when they break off and do gig work or freelance work. What were you thinking when you were like, oh, I'm going to set myself free and I'll be my own boss and all this, versus how that came out in these experiences with now, oh my God, now every client is my boss?
Dude, I was thinking, I started my own company because I wanted to go back to why I originally got into this kind of stuff. And I just did the exact same thing that I've been doing all this time, just in a different way. And so what it boiled down to was for a number of months, I had all of these clients and realized I'm still just doing all of this. You know, I'm still using my skills for other people's projects.
Still a to-do list.
Yeah, yeah. And so...
Or still the feeling of a to-do list, rather.
Yes. And so it came to a point where I just decided, like, I need to get back to the root of why I started doing this stuff. And I made a pact with myself that I'm going to take all these skills back. I had been using them, you know, giving them to other people, my time, my talent to grow and to sharpen my skills and what I can do. Now it's time for me to take all of that back and use it for things that I'm interested in. And that's really where you and the podcast step in. Because I don't know if you remember the first conversation we had about the podcast. You know, you said to me, we got this podcast space. How much would you charge to edit and produce my show? And immediately I was thinking, that sounds cool. That sounds like a project that I want to do. And so that's how thankfully we ended up where we are now. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to charge you anything. We should do this together.
Yeah. That was a, well, I guess just to touch on that part, to tell the background of that story as quick as we can, and maybe I'll expound on it when it's my turn. But I was looking, your father had reached out to me about some tracks we had done,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about music and whatever. And then I was telling him about the guitar store, and he said, are you looking for someone to do the digital marketing, basically? And I was like, well, I might be, but I can kind of do that. What I really need is someone to help me with the video. And your dad was like, oh, well, I think Seth can help you out with the video. And I was like, oh, great. And then I remember that first conversation. We get the guitar videos all laid out. And still, for the record, to this day, we've never completed a guitar video. Not one guitar video has been completed. We recorded some guitar playing. That counts for something. And then I remember you agreeing to do the podcast. And I'll talk more about that later. But I remember when you agreed to it, and it was funny. I was just telling my friend in Tennessee this when I was there this past week. When you agreed to do it, I was like, oh, shit. I'm like, I don't have anything going. Like, like, this was all on paper for so long, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? It was like, oh, well, now we're really going to do this. Now I've got someone that seems like they can actually help me do this.
Yeah, so, I think I can. I don't know.
Yeah, that was such a curveball. It was like, that was the moment the podcast went from this hypothetical to, Now there's no way this train is on the frickin' tracks now. Mm-hmm. As soon as you agreed to that. So yeah, that was a weird moment. So I guess we'll pick up there. What were you thinking when you agreed to do this podcast? I mean, I knew your sister, mm-hmm. I knew your dad for almost 10 years at that point. So I wasn't total stranger, but you and I were basically strangers at that point.
Yeah.
And what were you thinking? It was like, well, I guess I'll do this podcast with this fucking weirdo guy. You see, you know, family's known him. He seems okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that really helped a lot is you and I hit it off really well, like really quick. So I guess like I felt kind of the same way. Like all of a sudden it was like, I was in this place where, you know, I wanted a project that was my own, that like something that I actually care about and want to do, you know.
Yes.
And the opportunity presented itself, and I have a very hard time saying no to opportunity.
Yeah.
To detriment.
I was going to say, that's a problem we share.
Yes. So, you know, I kind of felt the same way. I was like, this sounds like something very cool. I could see really, like, I envision all the conversations that could be had and all these people I can meet. And then, like, after a short conversation, the train was on the tracks. And it's like, all right. I've never done a podcast before. I never produced one. I've done plenty of different videos, but most of my videos were short form or like little ads or something like that. So it's just like same thing as anytime something's put on my plate, you know, there's this new thing, you know, see what you can do with this.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean,
well, I guess then that's a pivotal moment. One of the things that you and I share that maybe I'd like you to elaborate on, mm-hmm. when you have those moments in life, whether or not it's working for the Realtors Association or doing jiu-jitsu or one of these things, what do you think it is in you or in your upbringing that makes it so in those moments you don't get hesitation or you don't dwell on the fear that inevitably rises? You can stick with excitement, keep mm-hmm. with your open-mindedness and do the damn thing.
Yeah. Well, I think my whole life has kind of been, like, for lack of a better way to put it, like, on the fly. I never went into something, I mean, say from, like, later in my career where I was, like, job hunting. Yeah. But I never went into something just knowing that, like, I was already good at it. So for me, like, everything I've done is a new thing. And I think just always being someone who wants to see a new thing and see what I can do with a new thing has given me this mindset where it's like when I see a new thing, I said new thing a lot, like my first thought isn't like, can I even do this or whatever? Like my first thought is always, what can I do with it?
Ah.
Like, how can I, it's like you're handing me a ball of Play-Doh and it's like, you know, what can I make with this?
Not what do I do with it?
Right. Exactly. Like, I'm not thinking, oh, I don't know. Can I even make like Michelangelo's David with this? I'm just thinking, what can I make with it?
Yes.
And so that's always given, like, that mindset has always allowed me to say yes to something and not be super worried about how well I'm going to do, because I'm much more interested in, you know, what can I do? Like, what is this going to turn into? It's just a genuine sense of curiosity. You know, along for the ride.
I was going to say, that's something we definitely share.
Yeah.
So we get into some of the guests, and our sixth show is with Mr. Donald Carlson, the man behind Tweeds.
Yep.
And this is where some of your story starts to come full circle and mm-hmm. branch out again.
Yeah.
So rewind me a little bit to what you're thinking. We're a month and a half into recording this,
mm-hmm.
where you're at and what that starts to become.
Yeah. Okay. So a month and a half into the show, I'm just like, again, I'm just playing with a ball of Play-Doh. Like I'm having a lot of fun.
But still working at this point, doing what?
So I had my first, like, it was my first real like corporate job. And there was a lot of valuable things that I took away from that job. But, and maybe this is a little mean, so maybe I shouldn't nail down what I was doing.
But you were doing AV production.
Yes, I was doing AV production. It was actually a great gig for the right person. And I'm not trying to poo-poo the job, because honestly, like, for the person who wants that life, like, it's absolutely perfect. You know,
right?
They looked at my portfolio. What they needed was someone who could kind of be the multi-tool, which for corporate jobs I think is pretty unconventional. But for me, being in startups, that was totally conventional. That was my whole career, was like, you know, whatever your startup needs, it's you and like four other people. So you have to learn new things and fill all these new roles. And again, just coming at it like, okay, what can I do with this? How, like, I want to get my hands on this new thing.
Exactly.
You know, I picked up so much just from being in these small, lean teams that, you know, we needed an animated video. I'm going to learn animation. I'm going to learn how to animate that video. So this is my first like corporate gig where things are a lot more structured. And so they needed someone who can kind of be that. You know, I was filling a few roles. I was doing graphic design. I was helping out with their website overhaul, making a new website. But my main thing was I was the video producer. And to be honest, like, it was, they rolled out the red carpet for me.
I was going to say, the other backdrop of this is you are in a steady job.
Yes, it's extremely steady. And that's a detriment. And I'll get into that in just a second.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to lay that foundation.
Yep, so I'm getting there, yeah. So, you know, I walk in and they've got this gorgeous studio. And they're like, basically, this is your playground. Like, you know, we have people, our clientele, who will contract us to do videos. So you're the guy. You run the studio how you want. You help them with their videos. And then for the company, you help us with our branding and our social media game and all of that.
Right.
And I'm super, super thankful for everybody there. You know, like, anytime I said, you know, I need this, if it was a new camera, a new piece of gear, whatever, the benefit to a corporate place is like, I'm not just talking to my buddy and like, we're like, it's like, okay, yeah, we'll see when we can do that. Like, there's a formal process. He's like, absolutely, fill this out, put it on my desk. And every single time I did, by the next week, there was a package in the studio with the thing I needed. So they put a lot of trust in me and gave me a lot of leeway. And I'm super, super thankful for that. And I still love, like, all the people that I worked with there.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was definitely a part of me, too, where it's like, this is a job where I come in at 9 a.m., I leave at 5 every day, and I'm doing this thing. And I kind of looked, I remember the first day on the job, because I was pretty excited for it, but I remember the first time I sat down at my desk, I kind of looked at my workstation and thought to myself, like, how many hours am I going to spend right here?
Oof. And that's a bad thing to start calculating out of the gate.
Yes. And so as time went on, the longer I spent, like, that thought kept like eating away at me more and more.
You planted that seed way too early, my friend.
Yes. Yes, I did. I planted the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're supposed to leave that one alone.
Yeah. And there's one particular moment where, you know, the company had this huge data bank of like content going back as long as they've been doing content. So we're talking like almost a 20-year span of pictures, videos, all this stuff. And it was a mess because a bunch of different people over the years had been in charge of managing it. So one day they told me, like, hey, can you organize this and make this make sense so we can actually find stuff if we want to go back and find it? So I'm digging through all these old videos and pictures, and I see a picture of the company, like the team at the company, and there were a few people in there almost a full 20 years ago, and a lot of my coworkers were in that picture, but I knew them 20 years after. And so it's like, damn, I don't want to be at this desk for 20 years.
Because one of the contextual points, too, is you're how old at this point?
I turned 21 at that job. So I think I was 20 when I got hired. Yeah.
So you're way ahead of the curve of when those, oh man, I don't want to be at this job for 20 years thoughts hit people.
Yeah. At that point, I'm a solid 8-9 years into my career at this point.
Yeah.
Which is a little nutty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So there is a huge part of one at that stage in your life, no matter what you were doing, where you'd be thinking, oh shit, I don't want to be mired to something for 20 years, no matter how awesome it is.
Exactly. Yeah. If it's not my project, really, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, when I was kind of going through this period where I'm like, I'm still doing this stuff for other people. I'm still not doing this for me. Using my skills for what I'm interested in, what I find cool. Tweeds entered the picture because I had this just crazy idea of like, what if I just stop using these skills for my day job and I do something completely different that's going to challenge me in all new ways that I've never been challenged in before. And now I'm only using my skills for the stuff that I care about.
Because this all started as, hey, I know a guy that's an entrepreneur we can have on the show.
Exactly, yes. And Donald Carlson, who's the founder of Tweeds, you know.
Shout out Donald Forever. Yeah.
Obviously, he's been on the show. I did work with him on some side projects that he was doing, like over COVID when no one was buying suits.
Right.
But I also got my wedding suit from him. So we've stayed close. And so, you know, when I asked him to be on the show.
Yeah, he was a natural fit for an early guest.
Exactly. And he was just like, absolutely. He comes on. And so while I have this like crazy idea of like, for the first time in 9 years, I'm not going to do a job where I'm doing graphic design, video, you know, editing.
Anything technology based.
Yeah, so I remembered, because my digital marketing company was definitely, like, not the way I wanted to go. I still have my corporate job. And on a side note, whole time I'm at this corporate job, I'm applying to other places and, you know, still, like, small-minded, applying to jobs doing the same stuff, thinking, like, you know, the grass is going to be greener. Doing the same thing, I'm going
to
be
happy. There's another way to skin this cat.
Right. So I just walked out into the parking lot at my job one day, like shortly after we had him on the show. And I call him and I'm like, hey, I see you opened another store. Are you looking to add people to the team? So at the time, it was Donald and four other guys. And he's like, you know, yeah, man, you know, who'd you recommend? And I'm like, me, dude. And so we got coffee that night. He laid it out, you know, kind of, I think also like kind of tried to scare me off a little bit, which made it even more intriguing for me.
I was going to say that makes sense, yeah. but that's a good thing for someone like you.
Because again, like now he's just like, here's this ball of Play-Doh and it's a huge ball. Like, what you can't make Michelangelo's David out of this. And I'm like,
oh, dude, I can try.
What can I do with that? So I put in my 2 weeks notice the following morning. 2 weeks after, I'm working at Tweeds and still there today. And I absolutely love like where I'm at now and how like I'm challenged in completely new ways. That's something that I think really like, you know, some people do want an easy job. And I think that's really awesome for people who have a stable, easy job that they really like. I think most people.
Or manageable.
Right. Yeah. I think most people who have shitty jobs, you know, they'll say that the problem is their job is hard, but I don't think that's really what they're getting at. I think what the real problem is that their job is obviously difficult, but it doesn't challenge them in a way that's meaningful.
Ah.
And so I think that's something that, you know, Tweeds is, if you wanted to put it this way, like it's the hardest job I've ever had.
Because it was outside your comfort zone?
Way outside my comfort zone, yeah. Like, you know, most of the time, like in my previous career, you know, I walk into the room and I know what I'm going to do with my day. Like, people just are cool with me, like, you know, just saying these are the things that have to be done and letting me do it how I want to do it. Here it's like, I'm a fish out of water. I have no earthly idea what I'm doing. I felt like a newborn baby, like, like straight up, like, you know, I want to get Donald back on the show and ask him definitely. What his impressions were of me early on.
Most definitely.
I had no clue what I was doing. No clue at all. And that really challenged me in a unique way. And I think, like, it's the biggest period of growth that I've had personally since my first internship, where I'm learning everything and everything's new. And so that's been really, really huge. And I'm really stoked on how, you know, my work there complements my creative project here.
Right.
As opposed to, like, at, you know, my previous corporate job, you know, I had to spend that time doing that and then I could work on this.
Yeah. You were a little more siloed off.
Yes. Now there's a really good interplay. And I think, yeah, I'm glad I again just kind of said, like, what can I do with this, and just jumped in.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you have some innate comfortability to saying yes to things.
Yeah, and that's about the only thing I have innate comfortability in. It's yeah. like saying yes and then, you know, just not being daunted by starting something that I have no idea what to do with.
Can you tell me about a time where that led you to an oh shit moment?
Well, okay, easy one is the digital marketing company, because that at that point, now I have all these clients who are, like, micromanaging me, and I realized pretty quickly, like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
There was one client in particular, really incredible person. Like, she's like just this very, very unique individual, and I started working with her to help her make her YouTube channel grow and help her make really great YouTube videos. And, you know, I told her when we first started, I'm like, you know, there are so many people who, like, are big in this space and they're nowhere near as interesting and cool as you. Like, I want to make you bigger than them.
Right.
And then, like, 2 months later, I'm like, I have to let you go. She's like, what happened? Like, we were going to do all this together. And that was absolutely no shit moment. Cause now I've got all these people who I'm just like, you know, I got them to, like, trust me and, like, join on with me. I wouldn't say I screwed any of them over. You know, I gave them great work up until I decided I didn't want to do it, but the pressure mounted, and I had all these people now who I'm like, I've got to cut off all of this stuff that's just eating away chunks and chunks and chunks of my life.
Well, and I think anybody watching this who's done freelance work 1000% can identify with that feeling.
Yes, and I have huge respect for people who do really well with freelance work and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
it takes a special kind of tolerance to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Shout out Chris and Kayla.
Yeah.
The best photographers in Sarasota.
Yes.
We got some of their work featured here, too.
Yeah, because they're on that grind. Anybody 100%. Entrepreneurial, anybody on that freelance gig economy,
uh-huh.
You know, that was another thing we've had a lot of guests expose throughout our journey. So that's kind of where I want to kind of drive this train on home for you a little bit here. So 6 weeks into this, your life is changing because not only you got a creative endeavor now that we've partnered up and getting off the ground, but you've also decided to give yourself a hard left for shits and grins.
Yeah.
And do something you have no background in that I'll just let the cat out of the bag. You've been plenty successful at, made all kinds of great connections, and
yeah.
Grateful for all the people that I've met through the people you've met. So
yeah.
That's been a whole unintended side effect, I suppose. But walk me through a little bit about what it starts to seem for you as the podcast starts to develop.
In what way? So how,
like in the beginning, this was a very sort of ambiguous thing. I tell mm-hmm. you, I'm going to talk to anybody about anything, and I'm not writing questions ahead of time. And but now we're 6, 7, 8 episodes into it. You're starting to meet some of my network. I'm starting to meet some of your network. What does it all start to seem to you like is going on here? Like this podcast, what did it seem like to you in the formative bit, those first couple of months?
I think it seemed like a lot of potential. Like, for one, I just really enjoy the concept of it. Like, you know, the actual work is interesting to me, but I still think there's so much that we can do with this.
And yes.
This is kind of a flash forward from there for sure. But like, for our 1 year anniversary, you know, we did the Keep the Hotel Empty family jam. And that was like, I think that was the first time I started to see some of that like ambiguousness come into shape. Like,
yeah.
Because I'm seeing all these people come in. And I'm getting to meet all these cool people. And we're getting to talk to them. I'm forming connections. And so I think the next like logical question is like, what do we now do with this incredible group of people that we have, you know, that we're associated with? And that was the first foray into like, well, this is something that we can do with that.
Yeah.
And so throwing that concert to me was like, it wasn't just like a triumph, but it was also like the very first time, like I see just a shred of that potential come to fruition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the interconnectedness being greater than the sum of its parts there.
Yeah.
For sure.
And just, I think also it was very gratifying to see, like, you know, obviously I love this, you love this, the people who come on the show love this, but now we have, like, a broader group of people who are just, like, having a great time and gaining something from it. And so I think that's what ultimately, like, I want with the podcast is for people to, like, also be intrigued by listening to someone who they wouldn't listen to otherwise, or they wouldn't think to listen to,
right?
And coming away with it with something new, and then being able to every now and again flip that on its head and do something totally out of left field with all the potential that we have and really provide something.
Well, that leads me perfectly to my next question. What was one of the most unique things or surprise perspectives you've gained or gleaned from any of the myriad of people we've had in here beyond some of the things with animal testing or certain funguses?
Well, big overall thing. I'll give you a big overall one, and I'll give like a more niche one, okay?
All right.
So the big overall one would be what you talk about all the time, which is like, at first we kind of had this idea that like, we're going to learn how all these people are so different and they all do their different thing.
Yeah.
And as we have done more and more and more, we kind of start to see this common thread where it's like, all these people have these like commonalities.
Big time.
And obviously everyone arrives to things in unique ways and they're going after a unique mission. But there's really, it's the commonalities that I find super, super interesting.
Yeah, same.
I think the other thing, a more like specific thing would be, I guess it's still kind of general, but like when you start to put something out into the world, it's very, very interesting what ends up coming back or finding you. And I think the first time I really felt that was when we brought Dennis Brock on the show.
The first Dennis?
The first Dennis episode, yes. Because that was really early on into the show.
Yeah.
I just put up a post on my Facebook basically saying like, you know, we have this thing going on. If you or someone you know would be interested in being on the show, you know, send me a message. And I don't even know why I was Facebook friends with Jennifer Brock. I'd never met her before. I think Skylar maybe knew her and she followed me because my sister Sky, because we're siblings. But she messaged me about Dennis and, you know, said all this stuff about him. and was like, we would love to be on the show. So I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just booked him. I didn't. Yeah. I didn't ask because
that would have been a green light anyways. That would have been the greenest of lights.
Yeah, and I think one thing that really has been awesome about this is like, you know, I just book something and I kind of throw it at you to see what happens, because I also like handing the ball of clay to somebody.
Yeah, and thankfully I'm also game for the ball.
Yeah, and that's why we hit it off for sure. Like, we didn't really know that about each other yet, but I think there was something underlying our personalities that we both fed off of and picked up on very quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, no expectations. And that was like the first moment where I was like, whoa, like I've never seen this guy before, never talked to him. And I picked up so much and really got like, that was maybe one of the first episodes where I also really got hit with a completely different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that pulled into focus how much, like, we have two ears and one mouth. Sometimes just closing your mouth and listening to somebody can really, really, really impact you in a big way.
Phew, facts. That's maybe one of the admissions for my portion of the show. Okay, so then I'm going to get you out of here on something fun, and then we'll switch over.
Love it.
I'm used to asking bands this or someone who's made some body of work, but as it pertains to us, we're still 59,925 episodes away from catching Larry King, so we're still in our body of work.
Okay.
But just to this point, what do you hope that the people that watch this show and see the culmination of your road from a 12-year-old intern making stuff to now challenging yourself and in a different regard and maintaining your creative outlet, what do you hope that the people that witness this or take are so gracious as to spend time digesting what we're putting out there, what do you hope they take away from it?
This one's easy for me. I have, over the course of my career, met so many really, really incredible people who are locked into, I guess, like a limiting framework. You know, I've met people who have all these dreams and aspirations and all these things that they want to do. But it's, you know, to them, it's not something that they feel like they can just go out and do, because they have to be at work at 9 a.m. And so I think what I really hope is that people listen to this and get inspired to just do it. Just do something, you know.
You're allowed.
You're allowed, yeah. I have a friend who I worked with at the corporate job, and she has this like lifelong dream to like enter the political sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember when we first talked about it, I just said, you know, so are you going to run in the next election? And it's like, oh no, you know, I need time to figure this out and I need to learn more and this and that. It's like, you learn by doing, you know?
Yeah, what's the adage with that one? Those that spend the most time preparing spend the least amount of time doing.
Yeah, and from day one of our show and like our interactions, like we've always kind of had this like really powerful avoidance of analysis paralysis.
Oh yes,
yeah. If we have to film an episode with iPhones and GoPros and the colorblind guy has to set up the lights, we just do it.
Yes,
because it's so much better to do something and learn from it and then take another swing and be a little better every time than it is to try and prepare to do it right the first swing.
Yeah, amen to that.
So I really want to see a lot more people on the show who have finally decided to go and take a swing at something and come on here and talk about it, because I want to hear about it.
Amen. So do I, and I'm so grateful for sharing it. Well, Brother, I'm thankful to talk to you. I'm grateful for everything you've done. It's redundant and a half, and you already know it, but we'll get it on camera, man. I couldn't be grateful enough for having you on this journey with me, man. Thank
Likewise,
you.
Likewise, brother.
And that's 59 minutes and 37 seconds.
Like, should we just swap spots, or should we stay where we are?
No, let's swap spots to be fucking weirdos. Yeah.